call the meeting to order. Ms. Franklin, would you call the roll, please?
Dr. Todd?
Present.
Dr. Jarvis? Ms. Jackson?
Here.
Dr. Loomis? Dr. Loomis? Mr. Scott?
Here.
President Mason?
Here.
Mr. Shelton?
Here.
Mr. Chair, you have a quorum.
Thank you. The first item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes of the August 24th meeting. May I have a motion?
Move that we accept the agenda as read.
A second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Very good. We have several items that require an action by the committee, and those are tenure and emeritus appointments, so I'm going to turn to Dr. Moore.
Yes, I'm going to invite up Dr. Dean Massey to speak to also two items, to the tenure for Professor Anika Burton and then also honoring tenure for Quentin Boston, Professor Quentin Boston. Dean, oh yeah, Dean Massey is right there.
Yeah.
Okay, good evening.
Good evening.
I'm April Massey, Dean of the College of Arts and Sciences, and I'll speak first to the application for tenure for Dr. Anika Burton, who is now an Associate Professor of Education in the Division of Education, Health, and Social Work in the college. Dr. Burton joined us a little over 5 years ago. She came to us from the Johns Hopkins University. She's a well-educated and a well-rounded educator. She has shown herself to be an amazing asset to the university, to the college, has been an amazing voice in the D.C. urban education community. And so I think you will see that in her packet that she is well-suited for the recommendation of tenure. She was recently promoted. Her promotion became effective October 1 of this year. So if you have any questions about what we are asking in terms of the recommendation, I'm available to answer.
Questions? Comments? We're letting you off very easy.
Well, I don't think you're letting me off easily. I think that her case makes one that's very strong.
Yeah, so she's Dr. Burton's gone through the process, and we're recommending it.
Okay. May I have a motion, then?
I move that we accept the motion as read.
A second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. No opposed? Congratulations. Are you good? Is she here?
She's not here. She's teaching.
Okay.
Congratulations.
We'll tell her we congratulate her.
I surely will. Dr. Quentin Boston comes to us from the North Carolina A&T University. He joined us in August. He's a rehabilitation counselor. He was fully tenured and promoted at A&T. He comes with a strong portfolio of research, scholarship, and teaching. We have reviewed and we've had external reviewers in the area of rehab education look at his portfolio, and we are recommending that his tenure earned at A&T be fully imported to the University of the District of Columbia.
Questions?
And Dr. Boston's credentials have also been vetted through the process here and is recommended by the Office of the CAO as well.
In the absence, comment?
Ready?
Okay, I'm ready. I thought.
I can't say anything. I'm just.
Sure, you can. Of course you can.
Oh, I was just going to say I'm glad to see some other deans bringing candidates forward. It was a concern that I expressed earlier about only certain
microphone.
Deans were getting people. I was just glad to hear that some other deans had candidates who were in the process and in the pipeline so that we would have all of the colleges of the university getting people established. And
so I just want to say for CAS, in the last 3 years, we've actually had a number of candidates who've come up and been successful. The most recent tenure candidate was Dr. Leona Harris, who came to us from New Jersey in mathematics. So we clearly are in the pool of colleges and colleagues who are actually moving their faculty members successfully through the processes of promotion and tenure.
Yeah, and that's what my point was. At one point, we were only hearing from a very limited number. But there is, the process was explained, and I'm glad to see that there are candidates who are meriting the endorsement of their colleagues.
And I think it also speaks to the quality of the people that we are now attracting. That's not to say that those that we attracted in the past were not quality people. I'm sorry that I put it quite that way. But I didn't mean for it to sound the way it probably came out. But we are attracting and bringing on board, you know, some outstanding people. Yeah, I like the way you put it better than the way I put it.
And I do think also as administrators and deans, we're doing a better job of actually mandating that our faculty members come through promotion and tenure simultaneously. Mm-hmm. And so we're moving people through process as necessary. I think we're doing a better job of prepping people for being able to engage in the process fully and be successful on the other side.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. Good.
Okay.
Question. Ready?
Question. Yeah.
All right, I move for the approval of Dr. Quentin Boston for tenure at the College of Arts and Sciences.
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Good luck. Congratulations, and hope you feel better.
All right. We are now at...
Yes, next to what your tax dollars at work, I'd like to invite up Dean Shelley Broderick to speak to the emeritus appointment for Professor Robinson.
Oh, she left? She'll be right back. She just...
Shelley Broderick,
Dean of the Michael. Michael, please.
Sorry.
I won't steal your thunder again.
Yeah. That's it's good. I want everybody to say it often. I am delighted to speak on behalf of Bill Robinson. Bill Robinson was the founding dean of the DC School of Law, one of our predecessor schools. He came to us from Oberlin, Columbia Law School. He was at the NAACP Legal Defense Fund. He argued the first Title VII case in the Supreme Court the day his daughter was born. He led the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights for 10 years and then came to us as dean for 10 years, helping us to secure provisional ABA accreditation not once but twice. You had to do it again once we moved up to the university. And he has been a faculty member for 19 years since his 10 years as dean, so 29 years in all. He's given it his all, and he's just retired. And we want him to be with us forever, and so we're asking for you to approve his appointment as emeritus.
All right. We have a motion.
Yes. I move that Professor William L. Robinson be given the appointment of emeritus status here at the University of District of Columbia.
I second.
It sails through. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Very impressive.
Thanks,
very
everybody.
Impressive.
And we're very proud of him.
Yeah.
Just wanted to ask the deans, Dean Broderick and Dean Massey, will we be able to get a chance to see these folks at a future board meeting? Maybe the full board? Okay. I just want to make sure. So they're going to be there for that one. Okay.
Bill's retired, and I'm going to try to get him off the golf course. I'll do my best. Okay. We'll see. I don't know if he's going to be in town, but if he is, he'll be here.
Okay. All right.
It'll be a graduation, hopefully.
Yeah, we do. The next item on the agenda, then, is to, we've looked at this.
I'll do it.
You can, okay. This is the PhD program in engineering and computer science.
Yeah, I'm going to speak to this one because I promised the dean that he wouldn't have to get up and say anything. And I'm a man of my word. This is back to the committee. You may recall the first time it came through, we approved it on the condition that the FIS be looked at and signed off on by the finance folks. Let me thank Dr. Barrett-Zoni because she asked some good questions about, you know, what is going to be our first PhD program and the implications of that, both on the positive side but also on the expense side. And she referred us to the dean of the School of Engineering at the University of Pittsburgh for some feedback. So we sent all the information up there, and Dean Shetty spoke to the dean himself, and he came back with a glowing recommendation that we move forward with the program, which I thought was encouraging. He had two questions, one about the capacity of the faculty to handle, you know, PhD candidates, and Dr. Shetty answered that question to my satisfaction. In fact, the way he's doing it with the new faculty he has and faculty from other schools and the fact that our faculty are already on committees of PhD students at George Washington and Georgetown and so forth gave me a lot of comfort. And the second question was about space, and you know, that's an ongoing question here for every school, but there actually is a plan in place now to do a phase two renovation for the engineering program, which should accommodate that. So every question's been asked and every question's been answered, and I'm recommending strongly that we approve our first, or recommend to the board that we approve our first PhD program in computer science and engineering. Yes. So that's the recommendation.
You spoke to space. What about equipment?
It's all covered in the plan, including the funding. I will say this: it is a there is some risk. It's a calculated risk, but it's a better than 50% risk in my opinion, because it's computer science. A lot of the equipment is computers,
right?
And we have those. And on the engineering side, we're pretty well equipped, especially on the manufacturing part of the engineering program. So I think we're in good shape. And we ran the numbers on the revenue based on current grant activity. But of course, with more PhD candidates and more PhD programs, we'll have more grant activity going on. So we expect that to go up as well. So I think we're good.
I'd just like to add that I spoke with a couple of former graduates from the engineering department. And they said they're ready. They want to get on board, and they're excited that we would have this opportunity or could have this opportunity, and that they could come back to their alma mater, finish up, get a PhD degree. Yeah.
Good. Also, can we also consider this as a dual program? Because I know a couple engineers, they heard about this, and they also want to do master's and PhD at the same time.
We have the master's, and I'm sure we can work a pathway from one to the next. Yeah. Sure.
I'm just saying I'm glad because we have an engineer in the family, and I would love to see her get her doctorate from UDC.
There you go.
It would be quite a coup.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because she is from D.C. and she lives and moved to Virginia, but to get them to come back here, I'd be able to say a little something at Thanksgiving dinner.
Yes. Well, look, this is really, this is exciting. It's going to be our first PhD program, and it's long awaited.
I just wanted to thank Dean Shetty for his hard work on, I know, the many iterations of the financial plan for it. So just wanted to say thanks for that.
So we'll let the record reflect, Dean Shetty, that we're recommending that the new program, the PhD program here at the University of the District of Columbia for the engineering and computer science and engineering applied science be accepted.
Okay, that's a motion.
And I okay. Second.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? There we are. Congratulations, Dean Shelton. Congratulations.
You can say something if you want to, but you don't have to. Wait for the board meeting.
You can practice now if you like. Congratulations.
Thank you.
We are delighted. All right. So we've gotten the action items pretty much out of the way. We want to move on now to the academic strategic plan.
Yeah, I'll just speak briefly to these. Soon you all will be receiving, the board will be receiving updates from President Mason, a PowerPoint, along with work plans for FY18 for the entire strategic plan. But as it relates to these two strategic plans, we've been working since FY17 on this year pretty much drafting the plans and vetting them with, you know, the community, and they'll be sent forth to you for your, you know, further kind of, you know, questions and polishing. So I don't think there's much else to add at this time other than that we have two plans. One is really going to speak more to the strategic plan for advanced teaching and learning is more to the culture of how we do teaching and learning. Professors, teachers and learners learning alongside each other and implications for that, with the academic master plan being more so on the academic programs and the operations and for the academy.
Good. Thank you. Any questions about this? Okay. Then I think, Dr. Latham? Yep, you're up.
Good evening. William Latham, Chief Student Development and Success Officer. To kick off, as you see on the agenda, around student development and success, first being the student town hall. And so to give you some context, we've had town halls since I've been here over the last 18, 20 months, at least one or two per semester, to give our students some context. And so I know our SBOT member who's been at these town halls can also speak to this as well, to give them some context for what we want their voice to be on campus and have them have the opportunity to speak to us about what their needs are. And so you see listed in my report the notes from that particular town hall held back in September of this year, and you can see how it's centered really around a couple of major things. I'm not going to read the whole piece because you have it there in front of you, but I'm going to highlight a couple of areas I think that we're working on with Perkins, which really speaks to our student-centered approach to UDC moving forward. And the first one is really around number two, and I'm going to come back to number one. It's number two, the meal plans, and the $5 box lunch called this $5 lunch. It's a sandwich box that we started working with Perkins on, with Troy's help and David Franklin as well, about 2 months ago. It was launched roughly a month ago and it's had great success. It's a $5 box lunch for our students right now. And speaking to Mr. Perkins today, it's been very successful for him, very successful for our students, to give them an opportunity to have a meal that is obviously economical, but it's also healthy and also gives them an option to come in and get it quickly and be able to get back to class. So we are excited by that. It's been so successful, in fact, that faculty and staff have been asking about that too.
Right?
Yeah, about something similar to that. So we're very excited by that. So we just wanted to see how we are addressing some of the needs of our students that were outlined in the town hall from September. And the meal issue and the food scarcity issue for our students is one of our priorities. Mm-hmm. And that's one way we have done that, through that particular $5, $5 box lunch for Perkins.
Question.
Yes, sir.
The $5 lunch box goes up until what time? From what time to what time?
It starts in like from 1 to like 4 or 5, something like that in the afternoon.
2 to 5.
Okay. And I'm just concerned about the students that...
Evening students.
Yeah, the evening students who are, or not necessarily evening students, but the ones that live across the street, whether they get their meals in the evening times. So I don't know if something could be thought about down the road, not now, but mm-hmm. down the road, for those students who actually live at the quarters.
Absolutely. So, and we have a food pantry also on Thursdays.
Okay.
Because we started this semester, and Juanita Gray is here, who's in the back. I see Juanita and Donnie Russell, who've been part of that particular leadership team, who launched the food pantry this semester. And so it's held on Thursdays in causes right now. We're looking at a location for that because we want to address it as a campus-wide initiative and make sure people have access to it. So, again, that speaks to those students who have access to it in that time frame in the evening on Thursday to come over and get items, fresh fruit, vegetables, things like that, bread even, to take back with them.
Okay.
Yeah, so, but we have that on the agenda to keep looking at other options as well. Okay. Next on the particular student town hall list that we have from coming from September is a kiosk. And one of the students had a big need for a kiosk to kind of address that evening opportunity or even early opportunity in Building 41. So talking to Mr. Perkins now about this opportunity, I know he has a meeting with Dean Massey on the 29th of this month as well, to help address what we want to see them do. And he said to launch this in January. So it'd be a breakfast lunch kiosk for students in 41. He also wants to have it manned by students also, which is opportunity for a work study possibility there for our students to really get some experience in that area, not doing food handling directly because they won't prepare anything, but to manage and operate the kiosk itself in 41. So we feel good about the opportunity coming to fruition in January. And he's excited by that. And he also hopes to be able to provide some type of scholarship as a stipend for those students as well. And that's coming directly from Perkins. So, again, some of the main concerns we heard in that September town hall were the food issues. So we wanted to address those as much as we could early this semester. And we think we've got a good handle on how we can see and meet that need for students going forward.
And what's happening? I'm sorry. In terms of the $5 lunch plan, is that something that could be considered down the road for the
meal plan?
South Dakota
Community College.
That's also on the list with Perkins as well. We've talked about that already. And I know Tony's been a part of that conversation as well. We are looking at something similar. It's a question of the kitchen area, the preparation space. How does he prepare? Does he take it down there and use it as a kiosk mechanism, right? Hot versus cold. Mm-hmm. So those logistics have to be worked out with him, but we already have that on the planning books for consideration.
Okay.
Yep, absolutely. So last thing I'm going to look at on this particular list coming out of the town hall, again, I mentioned the food pantry. That's something we are having success with on Thursdays, as you see on the second page, page two, from that vantage point there, and making sure our students have access to even, again, printing facilities, writing facilities, the labs that we have within the colleges, making sure they have access to that and being able to have services like printing that they're able to use on a consistent basis that's similar around the IT space for all colleges, because they mentioned some similarities and some dissimilarities amongst colleges around being able to print some number of pages. So we work on that too with IT and Troy and Mike Rogers to make sure that's uniform and they have access to that across the board. So any questions about the town hall?
Nothing that's on the agenda, but I would like to give you something to think about.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you can come back with us, and that would be something that would talk about the building and grounds plan for snow days for the students. There was a concern last year, and I want to make sure that we don't have that concern again in terms of the building and grounds when it snows. What is our plan for the students? And or if there are activities at the university, how we handle that.
What was the concern? If you could be a little more specific.
The slippage?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So,
well, we do have a plan, but there was a specific event with at this Performing Arts Center.
Right.
And somebody slipped on the steps. And as it was explained to me, what happened was that, remember, that was that really cold snow. It wasn't last year, it was the year before, mm-hmm. during the blizzard, I think it was.
Correct.
And so they salt, but if they salt and then it freezes again, it slips some more. So it just didn't keep up with it. But we know about that situation, and, we're on high alert because it did happen. That might be a good way to put it.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Moving on to number two for me on the agenda is the Gallup Strengths Initiative. As the board is aware, of course, that we launched this in February of this past year, of this year, actually, to help, obviously, us become a strengths-based campus throughout the university. That means faculty, staff, and students being exposed to the strengths-based philosophy, having taken Strengths Quest, getting coached and trained by certified strengths coaches. So we went through a coaching process of having 25 people go through and be certified as Gallup Strengths coaches. So in the fall of this year, we launched a couple of pilots, particularly with students. So we had three classes here at the main campus, three at the community college, freshman orientation classes, where we chose these classes to be strengths-based and infused courses, where you have strengths-based curriculum and strengths-based activities being taught and led by those same coaches who were certified this past spring. So that's been successful. We've had assessments done of those students thus far for both this campus and CC around their knowledge of their self-awareness, their ability to understand their top five talent themes from the assessment and aim that towards their career path and aim that towards when they have the sessions with people coming in from career services who talk about strengths, they can understand how to interview through that process, how to use it for their particular major declaration, and then how to obviously have a confidence about who they are and their talents, often sometimes for the first time, and what that means for their success as an individual, their confidence, their grit. So we're very, very happy about that piece from the student side. The faculty and staff side, we developed some lunch and learns that were launched this semester. They actually have two tomorrow. It's practice for faculty, for staff on the lunch and learn side that have really been about having coaches there who were certified to lead these presentations on strengths-based development for them as an employee and how they infuse that into their role, infuse it into the work they do here on campus, and how they even interact with their colleagues and their managers. So that particular cohort of staff training will continue in the spring with three cohorts. One would be an intermediate cohort for those who've had some exposure and training. One would be a beginner's cohort for those who have never taken, who just taken Execute for the first time and need that type of background of a beginner's work around strengths-based development. And the third would be those for managers. And we're looking at working, obviously working with HR and Pat and Deb. Deb is part of that task force as well. Deb Sullivan, AVP of HR, to help us embed this as a HR as well as SDS university-wide initiative for the campus as a whole and helping managers become better and trained around strengths-based development and how they use it to run and manage their particular units going forward. So that's how it's going to roll out in the spring of 18. But again, been very excited by the faculty response as well. We had a big faculty PD day back in August at Bacchus that was well received. Had a great number of faculty who signed up to take the assessment the day before. We had 140 codes given. All 140 codes were taken by the faculty of the assessment, which is really exciting to see them come in to the next day and have a real good understanding of what they were, how they could use it. And so we did a concurrent sessions all day that day at Bacchus for PD and got some good excitement for that. And we also have pilots going for faculty and CAS right now, and Dr. Dean Massey's helped to help us launch that within her college around graduate students, particularly with Dr. Mazel Johnson and Dr. Pam Hampton Garland. So we've gotten good response and good feedback from them around the initiation of that pilot for their particular faculty initiative under the Strengths Task Force. So, again, open to ask any questions you have about that initiative for Gallup, but feel good about what it's building with us, the strengths-based culture. It leads to higher engagement. It leads to higher engagement for both students and faculty and staff. So we're excited to see how we assess this going forward and how we measure the results of our students' outcomes for 18.
When you talk about engagement and that sort of thing, does the NESI pick up the same kinds of things that we're looking at here?
It can, right? It can, because the students' particular level of confidence and engagement on campus, once they know their own five talents, they use it to be able to aim it towards greater success because they have a greater understanding of what they can do in career, right, in co-curricular activities in terms of student organizations, leadership roles, so they can do it that way. Yes. Yeah. So it does cross.
They should be more engaged. That's what I was trying to go with.
And absolutely.
Have you directed some of this program with your student leaders throughout the campus?
Absolutely. So we did a student leadership retreat in August, and they all went through two sessions on the strengths-based assessment at the retreat. And so there was a great, great deal of positive feedback. I led one of the sessions myself. That was an all-day session. So that was really positive for them to have that one-on-one direct time with me around their talent themes. And so we also had two other people, Clifton Johnson and Veta White, did a beginner session with those students who had not taken it before until they got there. So the student leaders have definitely been exposed to it, and we have good feedback from them around it as well.
Yeah, you might have mentioned student success classes.
Microphone, please.
Don't we have three student success classes that have been?
Yeah, that's what I just mentioned about the.
Oh, you did
Van
mention.
Yep.
Okay, good.
Yep.
Okay.
Van Ness and Community College have three classes each, who have gone through a strengths-based approach for those three classes on each campus thus far this fall. So, any other questions you guys have around that? You can see kind of the faculty development pieces there in the report. The Student Center also did a retreat with students in August as well, and you see the first year seminar pilots that are listed here, and there's also a graduate student pilot I mentioned going on in CAS as well.
Excuse me. I don't know if it's related, but the board has started a student success committee. The chairman published a student success committee of the board. Are you involved with that process at all, or have you all, with some of the discussion?
That's his committee.
That's, yeah, that's my committee.
I didn't see that. I just saw that it was being formed.
Yes.
I hope that, though I'm not a member of the committee, I am a trained UDC educator, and student success has been very important to me for a very long time.
Absolutely.
So I'd like to be able to be included, if possible. I haven't spoken to the chairman, but I would like to see how we're going to approach student success.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think it would be a problem. I just didn't ask it privately, that's all.
Okay. Not a problem.
We didn't pick the members of the
committee. No, I know that.
That is a board committee.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Yep, first meeting is December 4th, so.
Okay, well, I didn't know that, so I wanted to make sure that I said it out loud somewhere, so if I'm available December 4th, I could conceivably be included.
Exactly.
You know, just as I am now, sitting and listening and learning.
Absolutely. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So next for me is speaking to the personnel and kind of reorg update for SDS as a whole. You can see kind of outline of an org chart there regarding three cluster model we've just really been able to put in place for the division with the help of talent management and CPAT and Deb here obviously has worked with me in the last year on this process of getting this done. So I appreciate their work and helping make this come to fruition as well. Three particular AVPs now to lead three distinct clusters within the division. One for wellness, one for student development, and one for student success. So you can see the areas of responsibility on each one of those particular clusters. And that particular cluster model that allows us to leverage the economies of delivery of services for both the community college part of SDS that we have as well as the main campus and help us obviously understand how we can be better at what we want to become in terms of accreditation and assessment, but also how we build relationships between those campuses as well in terms of how we deliver our services to our students and have similarities, but yes, have customization as well, because we obviously recognize the CC student is different than the four-year student and want to be able to have that customization be available to us as we design and redesign what these clusters look like going forward. But we have two AVPs now for two of those three clusters that are in place there. Two of those three are here. I want to recognize them tonight, if they don't mind standing. One is Dr. Timothy Hatchett, who's new AVP of Student Success, and he's been here as Director of Academic Advising in his previous role for 3 years. The second AVP is Dr. Serena Butler-Johnson, AVP of Wellness. She was our previous Director of the Counseling Center here at UDC. She's been here for 10 years and has done great work as well, so we really appreciate their efforts and congratulations on your promotions to AVP. Mm-hmm. The last one would be the AVP of Student Development. That candidate has been nominated and offered, and justification letter has been sent to HR, which is under review by HR right now for that particular candidate, and we expect that letter to go out to that candidate sometime this week for the AVP of Development. Very excited by that particular candidate's potential to add to this team and what they're going to do to help us become a real innovative model for student success here at UDC. The last piece would be the special assistant, which will be interviewed probably in the next 2 weeks and round out the leadership team for the Division of Student Development and Success. So any questions about that piece or the areas of responsibility they have under those areas? If not, we can... Yeah. Okay, great. We'll keep on going to Degree Works. Yes, sir.
Will we ever get a full chart? I forget what you call this.
Mike Peppers.
A full
or chart.
Like an organization?
Yeah.
Organizational chart.
We can do that.
Again, I haven't seen one in a while, and I hate to keep pounding on it, but it helps me understand what's going on and mm-hmm. who's on first and who's on second. I was glad to hear that we were using existing staff and structuring their titles. I'm looking forward to continuing to use the resources that are here on campus to meet our needs as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. We can get that done, too.
Yeah, not just that chart, but we've actually gone through a reorganization of the whole place, so we'll get you the...
But this
once it gets out of human resources and approved...
Yeah, well, we know where human resources is.
We'll get it to you.
Thank you.
And that's a good thing. I didn't mean it to sound.
No, I
didn't. So next one for me is Degree Works, and you guys know we launched this last fall. Mm-hmm. Dr. Kim Cruz did an excellent job. Has been really the figurehead, and the person's been spearheading this whole effort for the last year. she now has a position in CAS and doing great work with Dean Massey. So we're kind of happy and kind of mad, too, at the same time. But we appreciate the work that she's doing with Dean Massey. And she continues to keep us informed of what this work is going to be for us as we talk about degree works going forward. She did a great deal of training last year around faculty and staff and degree audits of particular program curriculums and majors within a lot of the colleges here at the university. We have a few more that we still have to complete in this ongoing process of degree works and its functionality. We also have to do some IT cleanup as well within Banner. As you guys already are aware, we have some Banner cleanup issues. We've had those, and they still exist, and we're also working with IT to make sure they get cleaned up in concurrence with what we do with DegreeWorks and all the IT platforms that we have, and it's particularly obviously around student success, but all the IT platforms here at the university as a whole. So that's an ongoing process as well. We also have an upgrade to for DegreeWorks that we have to work with Mike Rogers and Troy on, making sure that we get Banner 9.0 in place first, and then we go to DegreeWorks, which is 4.16 of DegreeWorks, the next implementation, iteration of what the DegreeWorks software platform is. But again, that's an ongoing IT governance issue that we're going to take up with the IT Governance Committee as we meet on that next tomorrow, I think, from that vantage point with Mike and Troy. So, but we feel good about where we are. It's been a great help for the CC in terms of making sure that the audits at the CC have been done better than they had been done previously. The advisors at the CC speak very highly of the tool and what it's been able to do for them in terms of registration and process of understanding our students and what their needs are coming into the community college. So we feel good that we're on the right track. We expect to have to put somebody full-time on this particular opportunity for DegreeWorks in EAB in 18 as FTE, and we are planning to do that with the director of kind of institutional reporting data assessment that's been approved, and we have to get that through our colleagues and friends in HR to get that done. But feel good about where that's headed and how we're going to continue to use DegreeWorks to make sure the campus is successful going forward. Okay. Any questions about that?
So this is functioning at the community college as well as?
Yes.
At the flagship?
Yes.
Good. Fully?
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Next is EAB for me in terms of, and you see kind of a brief diagram of what the EAB piece looks like in your particular report and the training that's been done around EAB moving forward. We've had, for the campus as a whole, we have 50 university stakeholders that have been trained. That's EAB's Education Advisory Board, Student Success Collaborative Platform we purchased last year that went live in August 14th. Again, it's a predictive analytics platform that we use and will be continuing to use as it gets, again, gets through the implementation phase this semester to pull 10 years' worth of data from Banner to give us predictive analytics around our students from the majors that they've been most successful in, the GPAs that come out of high school needing to be successful in for that particular major, the type of courses and gateway courses here on this campus they need to pass early in their freshman year to be successful as a biology major, as a political science major. So those predictive analytics are going to be very important for us as an advising process, an advising tool for EAB moving forward. So that's the number of stakeholders we've had trained, both at the CC, you see 15 at the CC, 3 faculty members, 35 at Van Ness, and 13 faculty members, and that's an ongoing training process and even some retraining that we have to do on a regular basis in 18 to make sure people understand the platform, use the platform, and have knowledge of its capabilities. One thing we've seen thus far this semester is that we've had through registration for the fall even, for the spring semester rather, registration has been easier because students have been making appointments through the platform already for the spring semester with advisors currently this semester. And so that's been a huge asset to cut down the wait times that you've had for us in the Student Success Center where I'm located. And we see that wait time really almost go to zero because they're able to make appointments through the platform already for the advising sessions for the spring semester. So we're excited by that continued success of that platform as it moves forward to 18. And I continue training efforts for faculty and staff in 18 as well. And I want to just go ahead, sir.
We're doing this, and this is a great job. Where's our relationship with going back to the high schools and tying our counselors in with the ones that we have here so they can be on board to taking us to the next level?
So we had a meeting, 2 weeks ago with DCPS around this conversation. President Mason, Dr. Summers, Dr. Tony Johnson from WDL, myself, around obviously having a very strategic partnership with DCPS going forward. Mm-hmm. We have we're scheduling an upcoming meeting with Chancellor Wilson's leadership team here to talk about a more in-depth strategic partnership, and one of those main components will be counselors and going to and develop relationships with them in terms of recruitment and enrollment strategy for UDC,
right,
specifically. Okay?
Good piece.
Last for me is, it's not on the agenda, but it's an enrollment management piece we want to put into this particular report, and you'll see it in my upcoming reports as well going forward for next year, and you see it on page 7 there. And again, no, this is not comprehensive. This is a snapshot. We'll have a more comprehensive report, I told Trustee Tarr, as the fact book comes out and is ready for your November 28th full board meeting. Talking to Maria Bird today, that fact book will be ready to go and be presented actually at the November 28th board meeting. Mm-hmm. So that'll be a more comprehensive data around demographics and DCPS and those feeder schools and everything else that we have that you'll see in the 28th of this month. But to give you a snapshot of where we are right now in terms of enrollment management here, you see in terms of headcount, we're 4527. FTEs at 3574 for the fall 2017. First time in college students enrolled by college for 2017 is 591. And you see that as assigned by colleges, that 591 number there. And for spring to spring comparisons, you see at the top of page 7, we have, as of November 1, we have a total active applications for undergrad admissions is 1,252. Total applications are up 19% for spring 2017. And up 33%, total admitted applications are up 33% for the spring of 2017 as well, compared to spring of 2016. So feel good about where we're headed in the total direction of the admissions process here. We got a lot of stuff we have to clean up in terms of processes and call center and some other things we're working on around mm-hmm. that particular concept with Blackboard that we know we have to get in place in 18. That's going to help us a lot with our enrollment numbers for fall 18. And as well as CRM, so we're excited about that too, but that's an ongoing process that we know we'll get better at and get in place for the spring in terms of EM. Okay.
Just a couple of things. One is a question. The fact that we have better results this spring compared to last spring probably speaks as much to retention as it does to admission. Is that right? What'd you say?
Yeah, I think so.
And then the second thing is, I don't know if you all noticed, but if you look at the distribution of first-time in college students mm-hmm. by college, 68% of our first-time in college students come in through the branch campus that we call a community college.
Right.
Which really means that we have to think about, you know, mm-hmm. where we put our energy in terms of retention efforts. Mm-hmm. So
yeah. And so and speaking of that, too, we've obviously worked with Tony Summers around just in the last couple of weeks around an advising model for the CC that's going to be more comprehensive and more reflective of what we see as a national best practice for the CC, that we're in the process of working on that with him and our advisors and our whole student success team, Dr. Peters and her group at the CC who's here tonight from that vantage point. So that's obviously a focal point for us, is making sure the advising model and the whole student apparatus at the community college is at the level which it needs to be to helm that student and to make sure they persist, obviously, to that degree at the AA level.
I guess I brought it up last year and I'll continue to bring it up. President Mason knows exactly where we're going to go about a legacy admissions program.
Yes.
For those who graduated from the University of District of Columbia, their grandparents, their daughters, some of their sisters and parents. We know that many of them have moved to Prince George's County, but we'd like to be able to get some of our own kids to buy into coming back to our university. Mm-hmm. But, of course, at the rate that Maryland University is charging and the rate that we would have for a out-of-state person coming in-state would make it difficult for us to get that student. And so I would like to see how we could, at some given point, maybe by next year at this time, really consider an in-state or close to in-state cost that would be specifically designed for legacies mm-hmm. from the university.
Yeah, we never forgot.
Okay. Which would also probably help our HBC status, HBCU status.
It might. And so the enrollment management folks at last contact were running an analysis on what that would mean.
Okay.
And so before we bring you another tuition recommendation, you know, I'll guarantee you that you'll have time to review it and decide whether or not you want to go that route. So we'll bring you the information and y'all can talk about it.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
Excuse me. My point is, again, maybe the young people who are going to the community college are normally selecting. Even our scholarship young people are selecting the community college.
Some
of them, yes.
Mm-hmm. 23.
Yes. Yeah. And we really want them to have the college experience, and the events on campus are up here. Again, they're all over, but a large part of it is up here. The social, recreational, the facilities mm-hmm. are here. If our kids are coming in and choosing this door, we're talking about building a community college campus at Bacchus for the career platforms, but we also have to think about how we're going to get those 403 young people up here on campus to really see that they can make it through this process. There are a lot of factors in why they choose the community college, including price, but there's also a barriers of don't want to fail right off, I want to win some, again, success. But when you look at 68% of our young people are choosing, and I presume these are, maybe I'm wrong, these are D.C. public school, majority of them are D.C. public school graduates.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
We've got to get them to the big house and stop, you know, and I'm not knocking community education. Please don't misunderstand.
Mm-hmm.
There is a lot of need for just what that provides in this city. But our young people are choosing a different path than we may in the. I know we're working on pathways, but it concerns me, and I'm trying to articulate that concern.
Sure. So, we have three doors,
mm-hmm.
and one is the workforce certification,
mm-hmm.
and one is open enrollment.
Mm-hmm.
And so, the community college, some are choosing, but some are going there because that's the only door available to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say most of them. That's the first piece. But your point is well taken. Our goal, in fact, the strategic plan that we're going to send you all the executive summary probably before the end of the week, it's all about enabling as many students as walk through whatever door they walk in to get to a bachelor's degree,
correct,
and whatever it takes to make that happen.
And I think that summarizes what I'm most interested in. I don't care how you get on campus,
right,
and I don't care what portion of the campus you get on, that you get to get the included immediately.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the separateness that I would like to get beyond.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
It's a college in the university.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a college in the university, and there are events all over that mm-hmm. include you.
Right.
Right.
If you remember
yeah.
when they started, we had trouble with the IDs. They all get the IDs now.
Mm-hmm.
We now got to get them up here. I believe I saw a UDC bus somewhere in town, but I didn't know whether it was us or someone.
Shuttle.
It's a shuttle, yeah.
Okay, so it wasn't my imagination.
Right.
Tell
them
about Buster
and... Oh, Dave. Yeah, so Dave and Buster's is... So homecoming, you see the next thing on my agenda is the homecoming schedule you see in your report, right? And so the integration of the support services we want to have for both campuses
mm-hmm.
is what we're speaking to now in terms of homecoming activities. You can see from the schedule a great mix of activities for both 801, mm-hmm. Bertie Bacchus, right? Mm-hmm. One we had last night was 200-plus students going, half of them CC students going to Dave and Buster's, a new one in Capitol Heights, right?
Okay, yeah.
And so busing two buses out, CC, Van Ness students going out, spending 3.5-4 hours together
mm-hmm,
at Dave
mm-hmm.
and Buster's, right? The integration mm-hmm. of those campuses mm-hmm. together in terms of that community,
mm-hmm.
one UDC feel, right, mm-hmm. and that one UDC culture. So highly successful, students didn't want to leave. It was 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah,
because of the chance for them to be able to Yeah, ask about that experience, right? Because that's huge. That's what we're trying to do, to build that in.
And that's what I'm saying. When you have 400 freshmen, for whatever, no other word describes it,
right,
you want to get them into the culture as quickly and efficiently as possible. I also see the ball games that have been included, and I commend you for that,
mm-hmm,
because I think those are the things that made us hang around campus.
And, absolutely.
You know, and spend time when you had to go to work and you had to come to school.
Mm-hmm.
You needed a chance to interact with your peer group.
Just in their defense, mm-hmm, the institution's defense, there are a lot of steps that we have already taken,
mm-hmm,
as an institution, and we have grown.
Yeah,
we're doing more than we have ever done.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to say that there isn't more that we can do, and we will get around to doing those things.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to lose those 400.
Oh, I don't. Right.
That's a full class,
right,
in 4 years. Right.
Exactly.
Right. 6 years, I don't care, whenever they graduate, but that's, mm-hmm, a full class.
Yeah.
And also speaking of that, too, it's a shuttle service that we have that should be on the books, I hope, by January, from 801 to Van Ness.
Okay. Well, I saw the bus, and I went, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Maybe, so that's
in the works. That's in the works. They'll help ruin that.
Yes, you did.
I saw them. I didn't, like I said, I saw it.
Yeah.
Was that the old bus that we used to have?
It's new. It's elite.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a new service.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was cool. I mean, I saw it over by Bacchus's campus.
It's Bacchus 801.
Yeah.
Yes.
It worked for me. That's all.
That's good. So, yeah.
I mean, because it's riding through the neighborhood. You understand, riding, mm-hmm, through the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying Metro, exactly, but saying UDC.
That's right.
You know, I had to take a second. I said, go ahead, because that ward, that's my, where I started teaching in that area.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So seeing it go through there by Catholic University and Michigan Avenue, I was saying, all right, we waving the flag at Catholic, in front of Catholic,
right,
University.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
So we'll keep you abreast of the shuttle when it comes on board, 4801 to Van Ness, coming up here. Right. The last thing for me is the homecoming schedule you guys see there listed in your report. Saturday we had the UDC, a concert, right? Go 7 bands, 4 roughly go-go, 3 hip-hop. So good mixture.
Good, thank you.
Yeah. So good opportunity. We had a gospel concert on Sunday. Last night, as I mentioned before, was the game night at Capitol Heights, Dave and Buster's. Very, very good and successful event going forward from that last night. Today was International Day. I think somebody mentioned they came through and saw 300 plus students who came out for International Day today. Very successful in the Student Center game lounge. Food from different ethnicities around the world, and just had a good time hanging out in the Student Center. Tomorrow is the pep rally and tailgate, and then after that, and we'll have mini circuses at the community college, and then also here outside the Performing Arts Building and gym from 3 to 6, and then after that, we have the fashion show. So very excited by that piece, and the basketball games between those two for that women's basketball game at 6 o'clock in our gym, of course, and then the fashion show starts at 7:30. And then on Thursday, we wrap up that particular process of the week with our Greek mixer and step show on Thursday evening from 8 to 11 in the Theater of Arts.
You
want to find
the highlight of the
session? Oh. Yeah, some alumni. Yeah. Barrington.
Who? Oh, Troy?
Troy's going to say, okay, well, we need
you got the Ben Gay?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, coronation, that's right. That was held last Monday. Very, very nice turnout. Taja Franklin, Miss UDC, Shaquan Hudson from the Community College, crowned at the same time on stage together for the very first time for the Community College Queen as well as the UDC Queen. So that was huge.
Yeah.
And that meant a lot to Shaquan, whose daughter was a little Miss UDC. So I said a lot for her daughter to be a part of that particular coronation as well. And spoke to what we're trying to build here at UDC around the students being the focal point for everything we do. And it was very well received by their families. They're very, very proud of them and their accomplishments. So that went off very, very well. So thank you. Yes.
Thank you.
Chairman, that concludes my report.
Thank you. Thank you.
doing great work. All right. Dr. Summers, can I invite you up to talk about some of the Community College DC Infrastructure Academy?
Thanks, John. How you doing?
Thank you, sir.
Good evening. Tony Summers, Chief Community College Officer. This evening, we've invited Director Odie Donnell of the Department of Employment Services. We have embarked on a new partnership with DC government and several key businesses in which to move forward the DC Infrastructure Academy. And Mr. Donnell, I gave him an honorary degree quickly, he is going to give an overview. DOES serves as the administrator for the project. This initiative and partnership will open opportunities for workforce development students, as well as community college students who are majoring in key associates in applied science, such as transportation, as well as other programs. So Mr. Donnell is going to give us an overview. Sorry for the lateness in the handouts. Director Donnell was anticipating that he would be able to do a PowerPoint presentation, but when he arrived, we hit him with the sobering truth.
All right, well, good evening. I won't be long because I want to make sure if you have some questions and things of that nature, I'm able to answer them. But as Dr. Summers mentioned, the Infrastructure Academy is a partnership between the District of Columbia and key industry and business partners from the infrastructure industry. And so high level, there are a few things that I wanted to point out about the partnership, which really just kind of starts with the reason why infrastructure was determined to be a high-demand occupation. So the Workforce Investment Council, which is the district's and the mayor specifically, her arm that helps to really decide what the key areas of investment are for the Department of Employment Service, specifically our WIOA funding, use some labor market information to identify that one of the areas that we've been missing out in preparing our residents for key jobs is in the infrastructure industry. And while infrastructure has a few different meanings depending on what state you're in, here in the state of the District of Columbia, what we have determined is that energy efficient technologies, which includes everything from solar, wind by wire, and all of these different technologies around energy is one sub area, as well as the electric utilities, which in some areas still falls under energy, transportation and logistics, and information security are our key areas that together come and become the infrastructure industry. Within the infrastructure industry, last year in just D.C., not the greater Washington area, but just in D.C. proper, there were actually 6,000 available jobs, of which we were only able to fill 2,500 of them. So there's a skills gap there in which we need to better prepare our residents to take advantage of these jobs. In addition to that, of those 6,000 jobs, the average wage was about $48 per an hour. And so that's a very heavy area in which we were not able to fill all of those opportunities. Now, all of them are not entry-level jobs, but those were just the aggregate average of all of the available openings during that time. The entry-level jobs, though, were right around $30 per an hour, which is still, you know, the entry-level, that's a heck of a, I can say heck, right? Okay. That's a heck of an opening. So with the Infrastructure Academy, what it really does, and I think some of you are familiar with our American Job Centers, and so it would put you in the mind frame of the American Job Centers, except for the training is administered directly through the facility. And so what this effort really does is centralize all of our efforts around delivering training, connecting people to employment, as well as assessing the various, whether it be talents, backgrounds, et cetera, that are necessary to enter into the infrastructure industry. And so what the mayor has done is committed about $17 million towards the actual capital project related to the Infrastructure Academy. And then through the PEPCO merger and a variety of other things, we have allocated another $5.2 million that's kind of focused on interim space and programming, which I'll kind of dive into now. And so I also present a little bit differently than other people. So if you have questions as we go, you can kind of ask me and, you know, we can kind of talk about it and dive in, because I'll go through this stuff fairly quickly. But on September 5th, we actually, I guess, we'll call it cut the ribbon and really officially announce the Infrastructure Academy, which was kind of ceremoniously done through an MOI signing. And through this MOI, we really solidified who all of the main partners are in a part of this activity. So it includes PEPCO, DC Water, Washington Gas, of course UDC, the AFL-CIO, DDOT, DOEE, DOES, and DPW. And so this group is coming together to kind of help us frame what the Infrastructure Academy looks like, you know, what type of services are available, where they're available, and then in what manner we will kind of implement this initiative over the period of time in between now and 2021, when we'll actually have a permanent facility. And so while we are currently in, I guess we call it the interim phase, we are currently coordinating activities as we speak. So for this group that I mentioned, in addition to the PEPCO merger funds, we have also received an additional $500,000 from PEPCO that will be utilized to buy equipment and things related specifically to the public utilities. That has also been matched by Washington Gas, who's also committed $500,000 for that same purpose. And then we have other partners like WMATA, who, while they are not contributing funding directly, they are donating things that help us to carry out these activities, like, you know, the bus shelter and equipment that we can work on. So far, in overall commitments, both cash and in kind, we're at about $9 million that will help us kind of coordinate these activities in between now and 2021. I think that one other thing that we're doing is already delivering some program, and I think with the at the skills gap that we talked about before, we don't see it as a reason to kind of wait to start training people. So really almost a year ago, we worked with Dr. Summers, the Workforce Investment Council, and DOES to really launch our first offering, which we call the Quick Path to Energy. And it's a part of DOES's new Quick Path programming, where we are creating offerings specifically for our high demand opportunities that are about 12 weeks or less, so that someone can basically come off of the street, enter into one of our programs, and within 12 weeks, they'll be able to get a certificate or credential that will get them directly back into the workforce. And so some of these programs include work-based learning as well as the credential. Some are strictly focused on work readiness and attaining the credential, like our Quick Path offering, which I'll dive into a little bit.
Let me ask you a question. Mm-hmm. What kind of salary are we talking about for those people?
So it depends. This Quick Path program, the average has been $25 an hour entry level, and it's after a 6-week program where they pass the CAS test. And so, yeah, that's one of our higher-level programs. I'll also say, though, some of the other, it really depends on the industry. I mean, infrastructure is a very high-paying industry. It's also very difficult to get into. So although our program is only 6 weeks, the hiring cycle is actually about 12 weeks. So it's like double the time of employment. And so we've aligned that with some of our larger utility partners. But it is a very intense and difficult industry to get into.
Slow that. You're saying in 6 weeks
they complete the training, but it takes about 12 weeks to go through the process.
And then when you say the other 6 weeks is with the
No, they're two separate things. So we actually prepare them through training, and then and we have aligned it with the hiring process, but they're two different things. So if you were to, whether you have this credential through us or you've gotten it on your own, it takes about 12 weeks to go through the PEPCO hiring process. You have to, you know, get your fit for duty assessment, which includes everything from the general assessments that we provide, physical fitness, and different assessments that they do. Then you have to go through a testing portion. Then you have to go through the interview portion, and then you have to go through the background portion. And so they don't put it all together. We can't influence how private companies hire, but as one of our primary partners, just using them as an example, we have aligned our training cohorts with their hiring. So
at the end of a 12-week period, we already have or will have students employed. Have we students employed as
a... We do. But the 12 weeks is their hiring process.
Yes,
the 6 weeks is our training process.
So if we, what I hear, and I'm trying to get clear, we have a program that is aligned with their 12-week process that gives them a 6-week certification of able to do whatever that service delivery is. But it's all part of the 12-week process.
No, it is not. They're two separate things.
Okay.
So what we have done is aligned it to where if you get your credential, if you successfully get it, then it is in line with you getting into the pipeline for this 12-week process. But one cannot come before the other. So you don't even qualify to get in front of the company unless you have this credential. And so what we're doing is provide the credential, and if you, when you finish, within a week, we have testing, et cetera, and you start the process so that you jump into the pipeline after after completing
and
our program.
This program supports that process while they're in the employment process, meaning that help them get the
This program puts you in line with the process. So you cannot get in line for that job unless you complete this.
But you have the credential.
You get the credential that puts you in line.
And then during that, when you have the credential, we then do what for the student?
We put you, you graduate, you finish, and
okay,
you get in line for
employment. But I thought I heard that there were, that a week later they started another steps to the
You get in, correct.
Okay,
that's
so you bring out your
process.
Application to the company, the company gets your application and then responds to you.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct, absolutely.
My question, go ahead, Chairman.
Give me a sense of the proportion of students who are able to get in line, who then are able to move into a job.
Well, so I'll say out of our first group of, I think, 30 in the cohort, I think we just had, and we'll continue to do interviews because, you know, again, it's a 12-week process, but I think a third of their hires were actually D.C. residents. And I don't know if you guys have kept up with what was going on during the PEPCO merger, but prior to that, I think over a two-year period, they were only 8. And so, yeah, I mean, we almost tripled that through this process. But again, it's kind of difficult to measure if you're only looking at PEPCO. And so all of our placements are not just PEPCO. We're looking at the industry as a whole.
Right.
So we've also, I think, developed, right now we've got 16 pre-apprentices in the pipeline who will actually go into the apprenticeship program at DC Water, as well as some of our other, you know, Washington Gas, and their meter reader. So we are preparing them. This entry-level credential actually makes them attractive for a variety of different things. I just simply spoke on the PEPCO piece because that's one of our offerings. So, but we're looking at any employers. I'm going to get to that in a second, but we're looking at a variety of different employers in the infrastructure industry. If you look at it, I mean, one of the areas, and again, I'll talk about that here in a second, is the airline industry. When we pulled this information that you have in front of you on the 2nd of November, on that day, there were 682 what we consider entry-level openings in aviation. And so that is an area in which we're looking at. I think UDC has a fairly robust airline aviation-related program and a former partnership with Delta that we all hope to revive that will actually help to increase some of those numbers. If you look in your package, and we, when we get to that point, BDC is actually the supplier for Delta, and you'll see that the bulk of those jobs are actually, those are the highest number of jobs, not just in the district, but in our MSA, are related to that one company and that effort. So I think our efforts are to ensure that we're not just training people and sending them out there, but training them for opportunities that are here now and projected in the future.
Quick question.
Yes, sir.
I want you to get through your program. The first piece, which is the UDC piece, the training to get to that, that next level. And I know the mayor has a big push for homelessness, and you said getting them off the street. What support services will these folks have?
That's a ton. So when you look at the, when you look at DOES, so we have an open door for everybody. And so when you look at the district and you look at workforce development, we're kind of like your central hub. And then you have our partners, which is a spoke, which would be UDC, but also you have DHS, you know, who helps to coordinate some of those things. Also through the IHC, the International Committee on Homelessness. So the short piece would be we actually provide a variety of wraparound services for anyone. For our homeless services, our homeless citizens who are looking for services, we do everything from mental health, transportation. I spend the rest of your meeting going through all of the things that we offer, but those services are not necessarily associated with this because they get them by coming to us anyway. Does that make sense? So if you were a homeless citizen and you came to DOES seeking training services, let's say you wanted to get in the quick path, a part of our assessment is what barriers to employment or training you have. If you're homeless, then the first thing we do is provide access to resources to help eliminate that barrier, and then we put you in the training.
That's what I was
and so that happens as a normal part of what we do on a daily basis. I just don't like to say that it's attached to the training program because it's attached to our service delivery model.
Okay. Thank you.
No problem. And so while we have not determined what the permanent location will be, Mayor Bowser has determined that the interim location will be at Wilkinson. And so we are moving forward with, we've done a site evaluation, looked at a variety of different spaces. And I think the commitment is that while all of our ills or the majority of our ills are being faced east of the river, it is important to put this facility there. And so Wilkinson is in Ward 8. We've evaluated some other facilities as well, but as an interim site, it is the one that really meets our needs. So we're looking at about 50,000 square feet there, where we'll have a variety of different programs. We have committed to about 15 offerings, some of them training, some of them employment related, and then some of those other business services related to the needs of our business partners who will be hiring these folks will all take place at this interim facility. And so we expect it to be open quarter one of 2018. And in the interim, we have coordinated, I'm not sure if you guys have seen in the paper and in different places, but we've launched SolarWorks DC, which is kind of our solar initiative. We've also put out a few grant opportunities that have recently closed and been awarded, focused on everything from registered apprenticeship specifically for the infrastructure related activities, as well as some of our registered apprenticeship activity, pre- and registered apprenticeship, along with the offerings that we currently have with UDC and some of the new things that we're looking at, including aviation. We've also looked at some of the automotive offerings and things within that realm. And so those activities, again, inside of the facility will take place in quarter one of 2018, but we're actually implementing a lot of those programs now. I think another thing that I wanted to point on, we've already kind of talked about the expanding transportation to include aviation. I think there are a couple of things that would be of interest to this body in addition to the interim space is that we are partnering, and this is, I'm sure you can hear it in the twang in my voice. I'm not necessarily from around here. I'm from Georgia. So, you know, we have implemented some of these programs previously, and I think what we've seen that has been successful and kind of like a national best practice is to really start the programming with business to get the insight on what their needs are, both short-term and long-term, and then develop programming, leveraging the agility that's available through the community college to be able to stand up industry-recognized credentials. And so later this month and as a part of December, we'll actually be convening our business partners so that they can – we've done a district-wide – and I won't say district-wide, I'll say the greater Washington region – we've done an assessment that has kind of given us some insights on what the needs are of business. So we've had about 700 infrastructure-related companies respond. We've received everything from job descriptions, both qualitative and quantitative data, and leveraging some of the tools that we have to really identify what their needs are. And we have some standard programming that we would like to present to them and offer. And our business has the opportunity to really give us insights on whether we're going in the right direction or not, to and whether these programs really meet their needs. In addition to that, we have MOUs with all of these companies that require them to, in return for us developing and implementing these programs, they give all of our participants a first look at their opportunities, which means, again, that's how we get people in that pipeline and at the front of the line. And so we expect to not only have the 15 offerings that we're starting with in quarter one, but we'll also be procuring some additional services that we may not provide through the community college, through DOES, and through these government offerings to make sure that we're able to fully satisfy their needs. Yes, sir.
I guess I want to know, with the relationship, mm-hmm. I see what it does for UDC in terms of exposure, getting more of our graduates out in the community with jobs. Mm-hmm. Is there a financial piece to come with that?
There is. And so it's determined based on the needs. So with QuickPath, I mean, I won't dive into all of the financials, but what I will say is that the cost for administering the program on the education and credential side, we actually fund that opportunity through UDC or whoever the actual deliverer of the training is. So, yeah, there's definitely a transactional relationship, but I think there's also an additional relationship in connecting the various services across government. So there are areas that UDC doesn't have the capacity to do some of the, more technical workforce development activities that DOES does, and at the same time, we can't deliver credential industry recognized training. And so in that way, we're able to provide a service that, and I'm using a round number that is way bigger than it is, but if it was the cost of $1 million for us to do it independently, our portion, and $1 million for UDC to do their portion independently, we're able to do it at about $500,000, but be able to double the amount of people that we're reaching. And so we do provide funding just as we would any training provider when we're coordinating with UDC as that training provider. But even when UDC is not the actual deliverer of services, there's still a role in each one of our programs. And so just quickly, I'll give you a couple of just highlights, because I think this this survey, this workforce survey that we've done, has not actually been done in this manner so far. And what we have done is we've had about, and these numbers have been updated on your, you don't have the most updated response, but we've got about 750 respondents now in infrastructure. About 42% of those who responded actually plan to expand their workforce within the next 3 years, which is a pretty big deal, because what that says is that there are more jobs coming into the District of Columbia, even more than exist right now. And that of those jobs, about 25% of them require a high school diploma or GED, which is also encouraging, because if folks have this high school diploma or GED, we can actually leverage partners like UDC Community College to provide industry-recognized credentials. And now not only do they have the basic entry-level qualifications, they have industry-specific qualifications that help them to be able to proceed faster and better. In addition to that, I think what we've also done really for the first time is start to prepare our residents for some of the great jobs that are available right here with the District of Columbia government. So I see DOT as a partner, and so they're looking for everything from, and I think one of them is bus attendants, which I'm probably getting wrong, as well as bus drivers. And so there's been a shortage for a long period of time, but we actually project to be able to fill that completely over the next 2 years. And so this initiative, the Infrastructure Academy, our Quick Path to Energy efforts, and now our Quick Path to Transportation efforts will all be able to kind of satisfy key areas that are available in demand opportunities. So. And unless you have questions, that is it for me.
Thank you for a wonderful
presentation. Thank you very much. Yeah, you did a great job.
Absolutely. Yes, sir. Absolutely.
First, great presentation. You're doing great work. But when there is a training opportunity on the table, is UDC the first choice if we can do the work?
Oh, whether you can't do the work, you're still the first choice. So actually, if you go back, and I don't remember what slide that was, and I thought I said that, but I move fast sometimes.
I would work primary.
Yeah, so primary. What that means is that as our primary training provider, and it's the same model, so I don't do anything innovative, just go where it works. And so the community college is always the cheapest and quickest way to deliver training. That's nationally. That ain't, you know, just here in the District of Columbia. So that's kind of our first stop. But I think, you know, if we're all honest, that community colleges, not just here but in the nation, can't do all of the work. And so what we have done is really started with the community college and found out what offerings are there now. I think QuickPath, y'all weren't offering the CAST exam at first, and I think they created, you know, an infrastructure to be able to do it. I think there are some other things that it would take us a little bit longer to kind of build out. And so what we'll do is procure some of those services while we're able to kind of flesh it out long term through UDC. And then, I mean, you know, when it becomes cost effective, we're always going to go, you know, with that choice.
Mm-hmm. UDC. So I wonder, I'm thinking of another P word. Mm-hmm. And my P word is preferred, as opposed to primary, because
there's some things that we can't necessarily say that at this point. I think we're kind of restricted from doing so. What you have to think about is that this MOU has us working with some of our private partners, and so based on everything from labor agreements to other activities in how we're going to implement this program, we can't make somebody preferred, because we would then be, restricting some of our CBO partners, some of our union partners, some of our private providers. And so without going too much into that, I'll say while preferred is a great word, we're gonna go with primary.
Secret primary.
Absolutely.
I tried.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Right, so. Oh, yeah, I've worked for the District of Columbia, and so my interests are in ensuring that all District of Columbia-related entities you know, have the opportunity to grow and succeed and provide the level of services we expect. But then there's also a party line that you have to kind of follow, and I'm going to do that too.
I understand.
Well, again, I appreciate y'all's time today. I apologize for getting you the information late, but hopefully it will suffice, and we'll make sure to get those electronic versions to you as well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right.
For me?
For the technology engineer, I might be a little late.
Yeah. All right.
Sure.
Since we don't have an athletics committee, I thought I'd mention this here. You know, our soccer team played for the championship, lost to the champion, but got selected to go to the NCAA tournament.
Oh wow.
That's great.
Won the first round, and then we had to replay the champion that we lost to, and we lost to them in the second round.
Yeah. Wow.
Does anybody know the score?
I
didn't get the score. Anybody?
2-1
in overtime. We lost lost to the best team in the league in the second round of the NCAAs.
Wow.
So.
That's not bad. All going in the right direction.
All right. Well, if there is no further business, I will certainly entertain a motion.
So move.
There you are. Okay. We stand adjourned.